Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Luis Martinez Fernandez, a professor of history at the University of Central Florida. He is an historian of Latin America and the Caribbean who focuses on the histories of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic. He was born in Cuba, graduated from a Puerto Rican university, and currently lives and teaches in Orlando, Florida, which is one of the world's highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans. Welcome to Background Briefing, Luis Martinez Fernandez.
Thank you, Ian. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Well, thank you, Luis. And of course, since we last spoke, there's even more concentration of Puerto Ricans in Central Florida as a result of those who fled the island in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria.
That's very true. The number of people leaving the island in the last 2 years before the hurricane was about 80,000. And since the hurricane, that number has gone up.
And what do you have a current figure on? Because I'm hearing that it's going to perhaps affect the upcoming November elections in this important swing state of Florida.
That is very true. That may very well be the case. As you know, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. So the only thing they need to do is to establish residency in Florida, and that allows them to vote like anybody else.
Which they can't do on the island itself of Puerto Rico, right?
That's correct. On the island, they can vote in local elections, but they cannot vote for the president. Once they move to the United States, that changes, of course.
So what do you make of this new report from a group of independent researchers at Harvard University who have found that they have a specific figure here, that 4,645 people died as a result of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, in spite of the fact that the official count is only 64.
Well, the Harvard numbers make far more sense than the extreme underestimate produced by the island. I was looking at some figures earlier today, and normally 80 people die each day in Puerto Rico. So how can you have 64 when we're talking about, I think the estimates are based on about 42 days, beginning with the hurricane. So the Puerto Rico numbers are, I don't know what they are, but they're very, very low, and they're certainly not accurate.
Well, I recall at the time when President Trump went down to Puerto Rico in the aftermath of the hurricane, when the mayor of San Juan was telling us that people are in desperate and dire shape. He was tossing a bunch of paper towels at a group of people and saying that how great the rescue effort was and the recovery was great and ongoing. And he was proud of how few people had died. So we've heard anything but contradictory news since then of how difficult it has been to get electricity back and rebuild infrastructure, and electricity and blackouts have happened on a repeated basis. So who's making up this absurd number of 64?
Those are the official numbers of the government, and they're based, from what I believe, on numbers and reported by funeral homes. And certainly Trump should not take any credit for a low number of deaths. If anything, the slow response most likely added to the death toll. So he's not a demographer. He's other things, but not a demographer.
Well, is that to say then that the people on the island aren't buying this, and the refugees from Puerto Rico who are now living where you are in Orlando, Florida, I take it they're not buying the official version?
No, virtually nobody's buying it, either on the island or among Puerto Ricans in the United States. I think this is part of the breakdown of the local government, which we have seen over the past few years, how basic services are not being delivered, or when delivered, low quality. So statistics is one of those areas where the government has also suffered.
Well, you know, this report from a group of independent researchers at Harvard University, is in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is famous for being pretty rigorous about what appears in its pages. So I don't think there's any doubt about it. Its accuracy. But the divergence between 4,645 and 64 is in the realm of absurdity, is it not?
Yeah. It would be funny if it wasn't that sad. And again, the Harvard study is based on extensive research by top scholars, demographers, and others. And the Puerto Rican government numbers are just off, completely off. As I said earlier, 80 people die each day on the island. How can they have 64 for that entire period? The numbers just don't make sense.
So let's look into what possibly may be behind the real number. If you're still having blackouts on the island, I believe there was a couple of accidents where a bulldozer cut an important power line, and I think another accident happened with the main grid. And of course, there have been endless reports about how difficult it has been to get electricity back, and the original contract that somehow was connected to the Secretary of Interior, Ryan Zinke, some crony of his from Montana, who had a company that only had two employees, originally got the contract to rebuild the entire grid in Puerto Rico that was absolutely flattened. So there's been nothing but scandals about the grid. But I bring the grid up, Luis, because quite simply, if you don't have electricity and you have perishable food, but more importantly, perishable medicine, and you're on, rely on this medicine to stay alive, would that be a factor, along with not having air conditioning and other, and being able to have, refrigerated food, etc.? So how
Definitely.
Much? So that's a big factor, right? What's been going on?
It is. When you look at a large population of 3.5 million people on the island, there are thousands of people who on a daily basis receive treatment for numerous diseases. This could be dialysis. This could be chemotherapy. This could be a whole range of services that were disrupted, and that led to death. There's no question about that led to death. People who were not able to get medicine. I should also add another factor, which may not have happened at the time, but I'm hearing reports of a large number of suicides in Puerto Rico, particularly among the elderly who have become depressed in the aftermath of this hurricane.
So depressed because, first of all, hasn't there been enormous exodus of people? And then you've still got the wreckage around. It doesn't look like things have changed that much since the initial weeks after the hurricane passed.
Well, there has been a return to, I hesitate to use the word normality, because it's not quite where it was before the hurricane. But, businesses are opening, universities and schools are in session. So there has been quite a bit of recovery.
But clearly, if there is this denial on the part of the officials about something as basic as how many people died as a result of Hurricane Maria, how can you trust the authorities? Obviously, you had during the aftermath, when there were questions about the recovery, you had, as I mentioned earlier, the mayor of San Juan saying one thing and the governor saying another. Do you still have that problem there, that you don't have anybody speaking with a kind of united voice about what's really going on there? I mean, frankly, I'd be more inclined to listen to the mayor of San Juan than the governor, but that's just my bias.
Yeah, there's obviously manipulation of statistics. That, of course, the fewer the number of deaths, the better the government of Puerto Rico looks in terms of having taken care of the population. Various countries report on that. For example, in Cuba, Cubans take pride out of the fact that they have been hit by enormous destructive hurricanes and very few people have died. So that is, I believe, in the best interest of the central government. Now, as to the mayor of San Juan, who is from another political party, you will never find these two parties and the leaders of these two parties agreeing on anything. This is just one more example of two sets of leaders who are at each other's throats and distrust one another.
So that's the same polarization we have here on the mainland, right?
Yes, that's very true.
So what do you think is the likely political future here? We mentioned earlier that the exodus of Puerto Ricans to Central Florida is probably going to make a difference in the November elections in the key swing state of Florida and favor the Democrats. Because I think it's pretty safe to say, isn't it, that Puerto Ricans were pretty disgusted with the Republicans and Donald Trump. And I believe it's the Republicans in the House that are screwing them to the wall in terms of the governance structure that exists, which gives Puerto Rico absolutely no flexibility in dealing with its own debt.
Yes. Well, earlier you mentioned President Trump tossing a paper towel at a crowd. That was such a disgraceful moment, and that's an image that remains in people's minds, certainly in mine. I don't know how he dared do that. So there's animosity towards Republicans, which is greater than usual. The other side of the equation is that Puerto Rican and Hispanic organizations and the Democratic Party in this part of the country, Central Florida, are making an incredible, extraordinary effort to get people to register to vote. And the reports I get is that that has been very successful and that those who have come are very energized to vote in November.
So would that mean, though, if the Democrats were able to pick up the House, it's a little less likely the Senate, but I interviewed an author recently who felt that the Democrats, if they ever get back in power, should use this power in the kind of ruthless way the Republicans have used power, for example, denying Obama's choice to sit on the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, and in fact holding out so they could put their guy on Gorsuch, which was a pretty raw example of just bare-knuckled power on the part of the Republicans. And the argument was that the Democrats should move to create statehood for both Washington, D.C. and for Puerto Rico, and that way they'd pick up four new senators, because the way the Senate is structured now, it's pretty much paralyzed ad infinitum.
Well, that's a good and interesting question. In terms of whether the Democrats should respond in kind, that's up to them. Politics are so dirty as we speak that who knows what's going to happen in November. Now, in terms of statehood for the island, I hope that everybody understands that that's not happening anytime soon and may not happen ever. There's a political party which is in power that promotes statehood, and that party keeps on selling this idea of statehood, and everything else is politicized around the issue of statehood. Let me tell you why that will not happen. For one thing, the United States is not ready to accept Puerto Rico as another state. That would be initiated by Congress, and the numbers are not there, and it's not going to happen. I believe that although Republicans would almost unanimously be against statehood, in Congress, some Democrats are not supportive of that either, especially with the intense racial animosities that are tearing this country apart. The other reason is that in order for Puerto Rico to become a state, they need to make the first effort to demonstrate that a large majority, and we're really talking up in the 80% or higher, that a large majority are in favor of statehood. And that's certainly not the case. What we have seen in the past is that statehood hovers around 45% when people vote in various plebiscites. So to get to 80 is not going to happen anytime soon. But there's a possibility that if Puerto Ricans are forced to decide between statehood or independence, then the statehood vote would be high. But still, it would be very problematic to have a new state in which a large percentage of the population would repudiate such status change.
Well, Luis Martinez Fernandez, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
And again, I've been speaking with Luis Martinez Fernandez, who's a professor of history at the University of Central Florida. He's a historian of Latin America and the Caribbean who focuses on the histories of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic. And he was born in Cuba, graduated from a Puerto Rican university, and currently lives and teaches in Orlando, Florida, which has one of the world's highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Alejandra Lariva-Lutt. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.